Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Fourth and final hour on this Thursday afternoon. We made our silly underdog picks last hour. You've got a chance to get in there and join us. Go to thegamenashville.com or also hit the Game Nashville mobile app and play along with us. You out there get three picks. And if your underdog wins outright, you get those points. There'll be a weekly winner with a pair of tickets to an upcoming sporting event or a concert here in town. Silly Underdog Picks, sponsored by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. It's a lot of fun. We've had great numbers, and we hope you'll play along with us. We want those numbers to keep growing. We mentioned MTSU is going to take on Iowa. Don't forget this Saturday, and that kickoff will be an early kickoff, 11 a.m., kind of like Vanderbilt in Northern Illinois over on West End. Iowa hosting MTSU, 11 o'clock kickoff, and that can be heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and 97.5 down in Murfreesboro. See if MTSU can hang in there, kind of like what they did with Michigan, right? Michigan was a big favorite. They didn't cover against MTSU. We'll find out how Iowa fares.
And you hope playing teams like that help you get better. I think the money issue is always one that you can't avoid, right? When you're in the position of Middle Tennessee, there's a financial gain to playing these teams, but there's also an opportunity to put yourself up against top-level talent in a tough atmosphere. You hope that makes you better. And they're playing three Power 5 teams, right?
Yes.
They've got Duke, they had Michigan, now they got Iowa.
Yep.
And we talked to Coach Stockstill before the Michigan game, and he said the biggest worry is the attrition on your roster, which doesn't tend to be as deep as some Power 5 teams. If you can survive it, then there is a big advantage. He said the problem is if you lose some starters while playing those games, that takes its toll over the course of the season.
Over on the NFL side, Melvin Gordon ends his holdout. He arrives to the Chargers facility. Doesn't look like he will play this weekend, but look for Melvin Gordon to get back in the lineup for the next Chargers game after this Sunday. So Melvin Gordon has arrived. The Giants will not place running back Saquon Barkley on IR. He's got a high ankle sprain.
It's surgery, too.
Hmm?
Didn't he have surgery on it?
No. No, he's not going to have surgery.
Oh, he's not going to have
surgery. That's what I'm
saying.
He's not going to have surgery.
I thought he was getting the surgery with
the
idea he's coming back.
They're not going to put him on IR.
I misread that.
He's not going to have surgery. And so is that – they've put out 4 to 8 weeks. Does that mean – sooner rather than later?
No, well,
for fantasy owners like me, I hope so.
What people have speculated, 4 to 8 is a big range. You don't see that. Usually it's 4 to 6 or 6 to 8.
That's usually what the cable companies tell you. You know, we'll be there somewhere between 4 and 8 weeks.
That's a perfect equivalent, right? They say,
somewhere between 8 in the morning and 5 at night. Somewhere in that window.
Sometime between the sunrise and the sunset. Okay, thanks. Yeah, so
We'll just all take the
day off. I
have
a job. I have to plan when I'm supposed to come home and leave my job. So can you be a little more tight with your window? But in sports, usually you don't get a 4 to 8. But people have been saying it's 4 would be way optimistic.
Well, I would say, but not putting it on IR, him not having surgery, right?
They're trying to keep hope.
Yeah. Well, now that Daniel Jones, you would think – there's a little bit of hope, maybe. A little bit.
How about that?
Looked better.
But Marcus Mariota threw 5 touchdown passes in his first game.
Oh, I understand.
It was great.
And no doubt.
It ironically was in the same stadium.
Yep, it was. Indeed in the same stadium.
The Bucks.
The other news.
The Bucks can't beat the Giants.
They're terrible.
With Saquon getting hurt. Yikes.
Terrible. The other thing that's out there is NFL owners are proposing a 17-game regular season schedule, not an 18-game, 17-game. This current CBA is up at the end of the 2020 season. That would include less preseason games, 1, possibly 2, and, of course, also more international play. They're looking to go more abroad and continue to grow the game. So that's out there as well. Tonight there is a Thursday night game. The Packers are hosting the Eagles. Just like in the Titans-Falcons game, the loser is going to be in a hole. I mean, the loser is going to be 1-3, and that's a hole you don't want to have to dig out of. Can it be done? Sure. Can it also be a hole that you can't get out of? Yes. More times than not, you don't get out of it. The Eagles are facing that. The Eagles have not gotten off to the start. They were a real sexy pick. You know, people really loved this Eagles team. They have dealt with a lot of injuries, Willie. That's what happens. People have to deal with this stuff. Some do it better than others. But the Eagles have dealt with a lot of injuries, but it looks like they're getting some of those bodies back. But this is a desperate game for the Eagles. So a desperate team on the road against a Packers team that's undefeated. Who wins? Does Nelson Aguilar have a big game after getting called out by a fan, a good Samaritan in Philadelphia?
I tend to like the teams in this section of the season that maybe have a little more desperate nature. I feel like the Packers are legit, but are they really? They haven't looked great in getting to 3-0. Is that fair to say?
That's fair.
They definitely, well, you know, the, I mean, the you Bears, Chicago, you can look ugly against the Bears, but they won the game.
10 points?
Yeah.
I mean, the defense has been the story. It's not been Aaron Rodgers. It's been the defense.
Which is why I got to kind of looking at that and like, do they really have that good of a defense, or are they due to look a little bit more human?
They've looked pretty darn good.
They've looked great. I like the Eagles in this game. I just think they're due to bust out. Tough place to win, though.
Tell you what, Carson Wentz loses this game. Philadelphia's not exactly a market you want to be, right? When things aren't going well. I mean, let's be totally honest.
Yeah.
Some of their big winning in the last couple of seasons, and of course their march to winning the Super Bowl was all done with the backup. Not really with Carson Wentz. And I get it, that year he was having a spectacular year. But then he got hurt. And so he's got the whole injury thing hanging over his head. And now everybody, now that they've, you know, Nick Foles is out of the mix, it's him. I mean, it's your team, man. You're the guy. And they're off to a slow start. He's at time looks pretty shaky. Hasn't been great. It's a big game for them tonight. Should be a fun game to watch.
Now, we mentioned Tampa. Right, they lost to the Giants. Saquon Barkley got hurt, and Daniel Jones is the hero. Now, what you may not have seen, if you weren't following closely, you may have seen all the highlights, and it's all about Daniel Jones. But the Bucs had a kick, right, in the final seconds, 34-yarder, and missed it. So, what happens in Tampa?
Was it Roberto Aguaye?
No, Matt Gay is the gentleman's name that missed the 34-yarder. So, Tampa Bay Times, Secret Deodorant, purchases an ad. What does it say? Hey, Bucks fans, do you sweat 34-yard deodorant commercial, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you sweat 34-yarders? Carly Lloyd doesn't. Secret believes strength is more than overcoming what makes us sweat. It's continuing to pursue progress and equality in all industries and sectors. Women may not play professional football yet, but isn't it time for a level playing field wherever she wants to play? Intriguing
After that story that was out there a couple months ago about her.
She hit the 55-yarder.
Saying she might want to kick in the NFL. And finally.
How about that story, though?
That's pretty. By the way, clever.
Clever ad.
Very clever
ad. If nothing else.
Yeah. And the never-ending saga of Jalen Ramsey. Each day, what is it? Monday, he was sick. He was under the weather. Tuesday, he had a bad back. Thursday, hey, man, my wife just had a kid. My second child was just born. I got to go deal with that. I don't know when I'll be back. So that's the latest chapter, the latest saga.
I saw
as Jalen Ramsey turns.
Yeah, I saw the clip. Doug Marrone was, you know, the media, rightfully so, was trying to call out, you know, basically wave the bogus flag and say, okay, if you're going to try to throw this at us, let's try to hit you. So when did he become sick? You know, the questions were like, so he's feeling better now?
Yeah.
So when did the injury pop up? And so Doug Marrone is just sitting there laughing. He's like, what do you want me to say?
Exactly.
You
know, and I, like, good for him. That's what he should do. Honestly, that's what he should do.
But you can't blame – it was smart of the guys asking,
like,
the questions.
Like, don't bristle
at
it. Just have fun with it.
No, he didn't bristle. He knew exactly what they were doing. And he's like, so he's sick, huh? Okay, so he's feeling better. But then he got hurt.
Yeah.
All right.
Like, everybody knows
so today
this game.
It's because they just had a kid.
Yeah. And he doesn't know when he's going to return.
Okay. All right.
I honestly, this is kind of like now we flip things over to the ownership side and the other side, like Melvin Gordon, like, what were you doing? What are you trying to accomplish? Now let's ask the Jags. What are you doing? Like, but what are you doing holding on to him? You just had to pay him, by the way, this week. We've talked about his weekly salary.
It's obvious.
What was it, $277,000?
But the issue is obvious, right? And this is Jalen Ramsey's fault. When you go public and you stop working and you say, well, just trade me, the team cannot do it. Like, the whole world knows they want to trade you, so your value goes down. They're not going to get what they want for him. So he has screwed them. If he wanted to get out of there, he should have played hard and been a pro and showed up, not said anything, and made everything known behind the scenes. That way, they could have gotten maximum value for him. Now they're going to get pennies on the dollar. If they get rid of him at all.
But they might have
too much pride.
What
to
are
dump
they doing? How long do you want to keep going on with
they
this
could
circus?
They could do the Keyshawn Johnson back in the day and just say, go home.
Yep. Well, him and T.O. both were fired in the middle of a season.
He could be fired.
Just fired. Just said, here, just get out.
He's given them grounds to do that. Just basically not showing up to work.
Right, but why would you do that? Then you got nothing. What would you do that for? You've really accomplished nothing.
You've cut off your nose despite your face.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back. Adam Vingan from The Athletic. We'll switch gears over to the ice. We do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Turris comes in. Wide right, got around Fleury. Turris comes back. Now Smith breaking in. He scores! Craig Smith on a feed from Kyle Turris. It's 1-0 Nashville.
There you go. Predators get it done. Final home game of the preseason was last night. Another really good crowd in the house as the Predators skate away with a 3-0 shutout. Pecorine in net. Craig Smith with a power play goal in the second, and then two Ekholm goals in the third. 3-0 Preds. Same two teams tomorrow night in Raleigh. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Adam, how you doing?
I'm good. And Willie, I heard I got a nice little shout out on the broadcast last night, so thank you for that.
Absolutely. We did. I thought it was a good exercise, and we were just talking about Dante Fabbro and how he won the poll. We discussed it on the show yesterday.
Yep.
And so good stuff. Good stuff.
He also got a shout out on radio twice.
I thought Dante Fabbro played a very solid game as well last night. Those long, he must have completed 4 or 5, and a high percentage of them too. It's not like he missed 6, right? But he has a precision pass, long distance. It's very smooth. He just does a lot of subtle things that are very good.
Yeah, and I know that you saw this article, Willie, a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, also in the Athletic. Yeah,
Scott Wheeler, who does a really great job covering prospects, has this series called The Gifted, where he breaks down what makes every top prospect in the league so special. And his point about Dante Fabbro is that he makes the intricate look so simple. The plays that he makes, the ability that he has to make everything look so smooth and as if it's not really requiring too much effort. But that just goes to the maturity and the skill that Dante has at a young age.
Steven Santini may have been onto something. Maybe the answer is going to be Matthias Ekholm, which he had 2 goals last night, looked really good, has looked good in preseason. And what's intriguing about this is we know his defensive pairing guy, his partner, the guy that's played alongside him the last 3 seasons, is gone. And maybe this is going to give Ekholm a time to shine a little bit more, because I think when 76 was on the ice – he was going to be the more aggressive player and more in the action, and maybe Matthias had to cheat a little bit and hang back. And maybe that will not be the case if indeed he is paired up with the young man Dante Fabbro, who we're talking about. maybe this is the year that Ekholm shines.
Yeah, it certainly could be, and those are some great points. And I was thinking about this earlier today. So last year at midseason, we at the Professional Hockey Writers Association did this midseason awards poll where it was just for, you know, to have a topic of conversation, and we voted on all of the major awards, and then we also created our own awards and voted on them. And we created the Rod Langway Award for the best, you know, the defenseman who best excels at the defensive aspects of the game. And Matthias won the vote among my colleagues. The interesting part of it was I think the reason why he was getting so much recognition was, as you all remember, he had a career high in points by the All-Star break last year. And that's the interesting thing about quote-unquote defensive defensemen or defensemen who excel at the defensive aspect of the game is they don't really always get the recognition they deserve unless they start putting up points. And that's what Matthias did in the second half of last year. He didn't have as many points, in the first half of the year. He didn't have as many points in the second half of the year. But Matthias has been a steady, you know, elite caliber, in my opinion, defenseman in the defensive zone for a few years now. And as we all know, living here and covering this team and watching this team, because you have so many good defensemen, one is always going to be underrated. I mean, Roman Josi was that defenseman several years ago. Seth Jones was that guy, Ryan Ellis. Now it seems like it's Matthias' turn to be that guy. And I do think that he got some Norris love. I think he finished 10th in Norris Trophy voting last year. So he was definitely on a lot of people's radar. So I think that this year, as to your point, Darren, without PK here, maybe Matthias handles a little bit more responsibility, gets to be a little bit more active in the offensive zone.
You know what also comes to mind as you say that, Adam? And I'd have to go back and look. But one of his best offensive stretches last year was when P.K. Subban was hurt and he was playing with Dan Hamhuis. And so he was able to push offense more with Dan Hamhuis being more of a stay-at-home guy. And, of course, Dan Hamhuis is still around. That is a pair that they're very comfortable with should Dante Fabbro have some growing pains in there. But it also illustrates that when he's not paired with P.K. Subban, maybe he's thinking offense more.
Yeah, that's certainly a good point and worth something discussing with him as the regular season approaches. I'll make a note of that. But yeah, I really do think when I look at this defensive roster, and we talked about Dante Fabbro, and we assume Dante will be playing with Matthias to start the season. You know, I also wondered. I think we talked about this when I was in studio recently, Willie. You know, whether or not they rely on Dan Hamhuis a little bit more this season in spot duty with Matthias Ekholm based on matchups, based on defensive zone starts, because I think the Predators, they have confidence in Dante Fabbro to give him a lot of responsibility, but I don't think they want to throw him in completely headfirst. So I think having a veteran like Dan Hamhuis, you know, who can jump into a defensive situation with Matthias Ekholm every once in a while, you know, I think will help Dante. I'm very curious to see, after a good sample, maybe the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season, what Dante's time on ice breakdown is in terms of even strength time as well as his deployment in terms of zone starts, to see if the Predators are going to try to shelter him at all or just say, hey, we have the confidence in you to do it right away. You know, go for it.
I told you last night in pregame that my answer to player who is primed for a big season is 95. I think Matt Duchene is primed for a big season, and I have not changed at all after these two preseason games. And I think what's interesting is we talk about in other sports certain players that command their presence, it commands attention, and you have to know where they are at all times, and you have to pay attention to them more, and maybe you have to cheat, and when you give them more attention, that means that opens up things for everybody else. And I think him out on the ice, his presence does command attention, and you better know where he is at all times. And I have liked a lot what I've seen, and I still feel strongly that my answer is the one that's probably I don't feel any differently. I just really like what he brings to the table. Now we'll see how this all plays out in the regular season, but so far so good in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he has really stood out in the games he's played. And, you know, I feel like he is really hard to knock off the puck. He's really slick with the with his stick handling and really smart with the way he approaches the offensive zone and how he's able to shield off defenders. I've been really impressed with that. And I wonder, you know, we know that this is his fourth team since the start of the 2017-18 season, which is kind of hard to believe when you think about it. But, you know, he started that season in Colorado, got traded to Ottawa, then last year traded to Columbus, and now he's here. You know, he really hasn't had any semblance of normalcy in his life over the last couple of years. And in talking to him, I think he knew, just based on where he thought his career was going, that this would be something that he would have to deal with for a couple of years. But we know how comfortable he already seems to be here. And I think just, I think that's evident with how he's been able to play, even in the preseason. And I'm really curious to see once this team's opening night roster is confirmed. We've seen a lot of him with Philip Forsberg and Mikael Granlund. I really like the idea of that line. I like the idea of having two strong shooters and Duchesne and Forsberg with a strong playmaker in Mikael Granlund. I think that can help Granlund as well. I think he can balance out the depth in the top six. So I really do think that Matt Duchesne adds an element to this team that hasn't been here in a while. Now, of course, a couple of years ago, we said the same thing about Kyle Turris. But I really just think that Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchesne complement each other as top six centers. Their games are different. It gives you a different look, a different attitude with each way that their lines come onto the ice. So I really like what I've seen from Matt Duchesne. He had 70 points last year. You know, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. And it's been since 2008 was the last time the Predators had a 70-point score. And I think the potential for them having multiple 70-point scores is on the table.
I spoke with Daniel Carr for pregame. I spoke with Santini in second period intermission. And we had Tenorti up in Barrel House for postgame. There's three spots left. How do you assess those three guys as they're going to whittle their roster down to where it needs to be in the next 48 hours? How do you see it all playing out?
It's hard because when you look at those three players in particular, Jared Tenorti, he hasn't played an NHL regular season game in more than 3.5 years. March 2016 was the last time that Tenorti played in the NHL. He was a first-round pick in 2010. Since then, I think he has around 55 to 60 games of NHL experience, so he hasn't really lived up to expectations. But he's a towering presence. You know, he would add that level of physicality that this team doesn't necessarily have as much of anymore with all of the players they lost during the offseason. You know, I think perhaps he's the quote-unquote easiest of the cuts to make. You know, I expect him to go back to Milwaukee, but I think he's earned himself a call-up at some point during the season, which he hasn't had in a few years. Daniel Carr, and I think we've talked about this before, Darren, when I look at the remaining players, all of them have to go through waivers in order to get sent down to the Milwaukee Admirals. I feel like if you had to handicap their chances of making it through waivers, I think Daniel Carr has the worst odds of making it through waivers without being claimed because of this season last year. The fact he's on a league minimum deal, I think, would be enticing to a lot of teams. So I think he makes the team almost by default because of that reason. And Steven Santini, I look at him as well, you know, a defensive-minded defenseman. We look at the trade that brought him here. I know that the trade of P.K. Subban was more for cap reasons, but I'm not sure how great of a look it is if you trade P.K. Subban, even if it was for a different purpose, and you waive the guy that you got back for him as the most NHL-ready player in the return. So I think he makes it too. Almost by that reason, which means, one of Freddie Goudreau, Mika Salamaki, and Matt Irwin, you know, are on the proverbial chopping block. I mean, I think it's going to make for a really interesting next couple of days until Tuesday by 4 p.m., I believe it is, Central Time, that they have to submit the roster.
Do you think they wait that long, or do you think this is done pretty much when preseason concludes for them?
I think they wait. I think... they're going to have some really hard decisions to make because a player who's been on this roster on a regular basis, whether it's as in the lineup or as an extra, some one of those players is not going to be on this team because the numbers don't work out. So I think they're going to take as much time as they can. to come to that decision.
And the game is going to be, what day can I do this that gives me the best chance of sliding them to Milwaukee? So you wouldn't want to lose any of those guys, any of the people that you waived. You'd like to keep them in your stable, and remember that every team has got some of these decisions, right? Or at least every team that has any semblance of depth at all has to waive one or two guys that they'd rather not lose to another team. But that's kind of the game that gets played all throughout the year.
Yep.
Right. It's definitely like being, you know, at a table in the casino in Las Vegas. You have to look at the odds a little bit. You have to look about, okay, which day do we feel like the biggest dump of players is going to be, and let's try to get, you know, our guys in that way so they're not sticking out. You know,
right.
if they waive two or three guys and there are only six or seven players on the waiver wire that day, they stick out a lot more. It really is a game of chance, the waiver wire.
We'll come back more with Adam Vingan from The Athletic on the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase. ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Right now, we're looking for somebody to play 18 minutes a night up front on the forward position. And so that's a battle inside of our camp, and we're trying to evaluate that to get that right and to get that piece right. And it doesn't have to be something that's written in stone and that's it. It's the way it is. But right now, we're looking to start something and then maybe show a little bit of patience with it as well and give it an opportunity to see if there's some chemistry.
That was Peter Laviolette with our show from training camp on Tuesday at Centennial Sportsplex. We're here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren, Donick, and Chase, joined by Adam Vingan from The Athletic, who covers the Nashville Predators. So, Adam, I've heard him throw that out in some various interviews, but it really locked in when he said it with us. There's a pretty good competition going right now. The way they have constructed the roster, with Subban going out, Duchesne coming in, they want to have two powerful 1A, 1A lines, not just the first line and the second line. And we know all year long how much discussion we had about the lack of the second line ever kind of coming into form. And so let's ask the question that they're looking at right now, and that is, can Kyle Turris win the job, basically, on the wing in one of those top two lines? Because regardless of what happens, you're going to have a guy who's played a lot of top 6 minutes that isn't in the top six, at least to start the year, if everybody's healthy.
Right, because if Kyle Turris is not cut out for the wing, he might go to the third line and center the third line. And if Kyle Turris sticks on the wing, as he's been practicing with Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson, Craig Smith looks like the player that might be moving down to the third line, which helps your bottom six scoring to have a guy who regularly scores 20 goals pretty much every year. But you're right. I mean, the Kyle Turris on wing thing is very interesting to me because, admittedly, I was skeptical of it when it was first broached, just because he doesn't have any experience playing there. I mean, the first day of camp, I asked him, you know, when was the last time you played wing? And he said he couldn't remember. He had to think about it. He said there were spots here and there, and then over the course of games, sometimes positions switch. But in terms of starting and playing as a wing full-time, I'm not sure he's ever done that at the NHL level. But one positive to that is he is, as we talked about Willie last week, he historically is a strong shooter. I mean, he had three seasons of 20-plus goals with the Ottawa Senators. And he hasn't really been able to use that here, or at least put it to much use. And by being on that line, being on the wing, which, you know, generally has fewer responsibilities than being a center, he wouldn't have to be the playmaker because Ryan Johansson would have that responsibility. He could focus on being the shooter and the finisher with Victor Arvidsson, and I think that could help. I mean,
I agree.
Really, they're trying to squeeze whatever value out of Kyle Turris they can because, you know, at this point right now, they're kind of stuck with him because that contract is not, you know, palatable to pretty much anybody. But I do think that this could be a good opportunity for Kyle. I mean, if you can't produce with Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson, you know, you're in trouble, generally speaking. But, you know, with Kyle, I like the idea. I've warmed up to it, and I'm curious to see what it looks like if that is the case on opening night and give them a long, big enough sample to show what exactly they could do as a unit.
I'm with you. My observation is there were a lot of times last year where I didn't think Kyle Turris was looking to shoot, was in position to shoot, and you would go through a handful of games and you would look at shots and shot attempts and there'd be a lot of nothing on there, even in situations where you needed offensive production for him. And I see just in these games, in the exhibition games, now you have to have it in perspective. Last night was not the Carolina Hurricanes. It was more the Charlotte Checkers that they were playing. But in the games that I've seen, he is looking to shoot. He is making use of the space. He is, and he's got a shot that is a dangerous shot, as you pointed out. So maybe this is what he needs. He seems to embrace it a little bit, and that probably is the best way to create two lines where it's hard to distinguish what's the first line and what's the second line.
Yeah, for sure. And like we talked about before the break, you know, I really like the idea of Granlund, Duchesne, and Forsberg. I went back over the summer and was looking to Mikhail Granlund a little bit closer just because he did not perform as we all expected him to at the trade deadline for a number of reasons. But I found that his most common line mates in Minnesota were Miku Koivu and Jason Zucker. And that line, from an analytical standpoint, was phenomenal in terms of controlling scoring chances, expected goal percentage, all of the fancy stats we like to use, Willie. They were really, really good. And I look at the makeup of that. I look up the makeup of that line. You know, Granlund, you know, he was among one of the better players in the league in terms of primary assists per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. I mean, he is a really good playmaker. And, you know, having him on a line with Duchesne, who also has playmaking ability, but Duchesne is also more of a scorer. And having Forsberg, as we know, who is definitely a scorer, I really like the idea of maybe of Granlund being, you know, the engine of that line, you know, being the distributor and getting the puck to Duchesne and Forsberg in places where they can shoot and score. You know, and I think that sort of works to the way that also works on the top line with Johansson, as we know, can feed Arvidsson, and now he can feed Turris. So, you know, I think the potential of having a 1A and 1B line is greater than maybe it's ever been in Nashville with the potential of this top set.
Then the next question becomes, how do you best utilize Craig Smith? Because once you have those top six, you're going to want to play those guys a lot of minutes. Somewhere in there, you're going to have a checking line, and maybe Craig Smith is on that more or less checking line, and you're looking for more scoring for that. I do think he's a very reliable player in his own end. But that would force you to sort of break up the traditional checking line of Sissons, Bonino, and Watson. So they got options there, and all of this to say, there might be a line that gets less minutes unless they're ahead and they can roll the four lines. But at the same time, you have four lines that all would bring something to the table in terms of a little extra offensive punch that has been missing.
Well, remember, you definitely remember, you were there, you know, late in the season when Kyle Turris was scratched in the final two games of that West Coast road trip against Los Angeles and San Jose, the line that Peter Laviolette put on the ice for was Cali Yarncrow, Colton Sissons, and Craig Smith.
Yes.
And they played really well in a small sample. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them go back to that. You know, Colton Sissons is an interesting, you know, is an interesting cog in all of this because we've seen over the course of his NHL career, one, he has shown improvement in every season he's been on this roster full time. He just signed a contract, a 7-year contract. And you know, I really do think that he has another gear to get to. I think his offensive game is certainly, you know, bound to improve. So I think that if you had a line of those three, for example, you do have three players who are defensively reliable. You have players that have shown to be able to score. I mean, Cali Yarncroke had a rough year last year offensively, but he has shown in the past to be able to score. I think he had 16 goals 2 years ago. You know, so that's another. So it's not a traditional checking line, as you said, in the sense of the Sissons, Bonino, Watson line we've seen in the past, but it does have the ability to be effective in all three zones.
And if you did that line, then you still have Bonino and Watson is a pretty good tandem that
right.
could handle a lot of responsibility. And you could throw a speed element in there with Grimaldi.
Yeah. Exactly. I think it's really going to be interesting to see what they end up coming out with against Minnesota a week from today. I do think there are a lot of options there, and I think people should be intrigued by that.
Adam, good visit as always. Appreciate it. We'll chat soon.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Back to wrap up Thursday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. We've been kind of talking about the state of football in this state this week of, man, it's not great. And I look at this schedule, and I was telling Willie during the break, I don't have a clue what's going to happen in Atlanta between the Titans and the Falcons. I don't have a clue how it's going to play out. I really don't. I don't have a good feel one way or the other. I don't have a clue how things are going to work over on West End. Northern Illinois comes to town. Vanderbilt's favored by 6.5. You got to win this. You have to. I have no clue how this is going to play out in the bye week for UT. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to play out, how they look in the bye week. That's not good. That's not good when you have no clue. You don't have any real feel because you just don't know what to expect. I mean, I think as we would sit here today and admit, other than Vanderbilt a little bit, it hasn't gone as planned, right? I don't think any of us thought the Titans would be 1-2, especially after a dominating win in Cleveland to start off the season. I don't think nobody saw Tennessee losing to Georgia State and BYU and then just getting mopped by Florida. They don't look competitive at all. I mean, their only win is Chattanooga. And Vanderbilt, like I said, that's probably the only one. Would have liked to have seen them be a little bit more competitive against Purdue. I still don't understand why the tackling, it continues to be an issue and why they can't stop anybody. But this just in, Georgia and LSU and Purdue are pretty darn good offenses. That was when Purdue had their quarterback. He's since gone down. But that's not good when we're sitting here in September and we have no clue what these teams are like. No good feel of what they're going to do from game in and game out.
I just want to see desperation from both teams. You can play well and lose. You can look good losing. Unfortunately, you're running out of strikes, especially if you're Vanderbilt. They cannot lose this game. That's the problem. But I want to see desperation. I want to see both teams playing at their best. I feel like if Vanderbilt plays their best, it'll be good enough to beat Northern Illinois. We'll see.
But isn't that weird that you just think about what you just said out loud? I feel like if Vanderbilt plays their best, they should beat Northern Illinois at home? Five times out loud. I feel like if the SEC team at home they should beat Northern Illinois.
I don't want to disrespect Northern Illinois.
Yikes.
But Northern Illinois has won a lot of games. I feel like the results will be there. You know how I get with Vanderbilt.
I know, but Willie.
This is Coach Willie you're talking to here. Right? I get like that. I mean, you want me to say it stronger?
I've been around Coach Willie for a long time.
Their best beats Northern Illinois. It does.
We're not talking about beating Northern Illinois. They should beat down Northern Illinois. We're talking about winning by 3 touchdowns.
But honestly, I would take a 3-point win. I just want to see. I want to see desperation.
Is that where you are? Like you're that scarred
right
now?
You got to win. Like if they play bad and win, that gets the job. They've got to win this game. If they're going to go to a bowl game, this has got to be a W.
Of course.
So I want to see desperation. You can be desperate and play hard, but play sloppy, right? Fumble the ball a couple of times. There's all kinds of things that can happen. These are college kids. The Titans, 1-3, you can dig out of it. But I think it's important that they play well. There's got to be something better. Offensively, I feel like, as we talked about earlier in the show, there are matchups out there that should dictate that the offense looks better. This is not that Atlanta, we'll see how the injury report looks by the end of the week. But they have issues on defense where this is not a first-rate defense. But at the same time, it's a they're playing at home. They're going to score some points. So the offense has got to pick up the slack here. You cannot have another game where you're walking out of there going, yeah, well, the offense, you know, they couldn't protect the quarterback, or they couldn't finish drives, or they got the ball to the 35-yard line and then went backwards. Can't have that. It's got to get better, and I feel like it can. I feel like it can.
Max, you got to jump in there. I mean, you spent more time around that football program than us on a daily basis. I'm alarmed, because if that's, hey, just win, baby, I get it, but my goodness, that's a little alarming if it's just a squeaker. It's just a win. To me, you got to go out there. If you truly are desperate, you got to go out there and set the tone and take care of business.
I think it's kind of the same as the Nevada game last year, week two.
Which I was at.
I think Vandy was maybe opened as a 7.5 point favorite in that game. I think it got up to 9.5. And
I think that's right.
Vandy won that game 41-10.
And it was close at half, and then they pulled away in the second half.
Yep. Yeah, it's. I think if this game ends up being tight into the fourth, then Vandy does have legitimate concerns going forward.
See, that's a good example.
I don't think we should let these opponents skew our opinion of this Vanderbilt team. Because, I mean, we've maintained that this Vanderbilt team is capable of, first of all, putting up points, which they did against LSU. And they're capable of winning some games.
You got to win 6 or 7 games for it to be a good season.
I think Willie's right, though, that this is a game where it has to start. And if it doesn't start here, when the heck is it going to start? Is it going to start at Ole Miss? Mm. If it doesn't start against Northern Illinois, probably not.
Yeah.
I will go out on a limb and even say if they win against Northern Illinois, they're probably an underdog at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Not that Ole Miss is a great team, but they will be an underdog at Ole Miss.
It'll be a slight underdog.
You can't beat Northern Illinois. You could beat Ole Miss, but like Max was saying, you're running out of time. You go 0-4, you're just –
The math will be dictated. You beat Northern Illinois 17-16, or if you beat Northern Illinois 49-6, that's how that line's going to be different.
Right. Ultimately, it's not about the line. It's about you got to win this week, and then you've got to start winning some of those mid-range swing games in the SEC.
That'll do it for our show today. Have a great rest of your day. We'll be back at it tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Look forward to talking to you then.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.